All right. Dope. First and foremost, just want to say thank you for hopping on the podcast, bro. Really appreciate it.
Nah, thank you. Thank you. This is an amazing opportunity. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Appreciate the love, my guy. Thank you. For today's episode, just to give you context about the podcast for you as well as, you know, folks that might be listening for the first time. Podcast is called In the Hijra. What that translates to is In the Neighborhood in Arabic. And the whole purpose of the podcast is to just kind of put people's journey and just like story on display for a lot of the folks, you know, that might come from, you know, low-income neighborhoods. It's very rare to see folks in different disciplines and career fields. That's just not something we're exposed to. So the whole purpose of this platform is just to kind of share a lot of those stories. So the interview just kind of going deep into how you just kind of got to where you are and where it all started. So today we got Roshan with us. Welcome, Roshan.
What's up? What's up?
You want to start off real quick by just giving a quick intro about yourself and who you are?
Yeah, so as Ahmed just said, I'm Roshan Rooms. I wasn't born in Woodbury, Minnesota, but that's where I live at right now. I moved from Arizona back about, I want to say, 7-8 years now. It's been a little bit since I've been in Minnesota now. So, yeah, I live in Minnesota. I just got done with my industrial engineering degree, so finally glad I got there.
Congratulations on that.
Yes, sir. So, yeah, but that's a little bit about myself.
Yeah, so Roshan and I actually met through NSBE, National Society of Black Engineers. That's how we kind of got connected when I first met him. Real quick, just to start off with, one thing I always like to just kind of dive a little bit into kind of like folks' upbringing, and just out of curiosity, I want to ask you, are there kind of like any experiences growing up or just, you know, any parts of your upbringing that you'd say kind of shaped you to be the person you are today?
Yeah, I think really just like kind of like the person I kind of like idolize was like my dad, and like he worked so hard to get to the level where he's at like now in terms of like his career, and like a lot of people who know me know that like my dad is my idol because he's always tried to teach me like the hard work factor. Like, you can't get anywhere in life without hard work, and so that's kind of like what I live by every day, whether it's like in my track career or even in the classroom. Like, I always try like my very best to make sure that everybody, like everything I do is like I'm giving 100% effort into it, or even more than that. And so I think that's like what kind of got me to the point that I am today, is like that hard work. And so, yeah, I try to be up at it, try to persevere. I just work hard. I'm determined. And I just want to be the guy up top, you know, I want to be on top.
I love that mindset. What did you see yourself kind of doing when you were a kid? Were there like any, like, did you see yourself going into athletics, or did you see yourself like going into a certain career field like growing up?
Yeah, so like when I was growing up, my main goal was to be a professional athlete. Like, I was like, football was like my main sport when I was younger, so I was like, okay, it's gonna be a football player. I actually like wrote a letter to myself too, like when I was in junior high, and I said like at the bottom, it said I was gonna get my master's degree, but also like another thing on there too was like saying that I wanted to be a professional athlete. I had a team I was gonna play for, what position, everything. Like, it was already mapped out.
What team did you play for?
Arizona Cardinals. That's my team. Yes. Go Cardinals.
So but obviously, did you also do track while doing football growing up?
Yeah, actually, I didn't start track until I was like in the 6th or 7th grade. Mm-hmm. And I was playing football ever since I was like 6 years old. So, and then I stopped come like 9th grade year and transitioned more into the track and field role. So plans changed a little bit, but
yeah. And then on top of that, like you said, you just finished up your IE degree. Congrats again on that. What made you also, on top of being a professional athlete, want to also pursue engineering? It's not very common to see athletes go into engineering.
Yeah, so when I was in high school and I was trying to figure out like what I wanted to do like in college, I was in a college prep course called AVID, Advanced Via Individual Determination, for those who don't know what that is. And basically it's just a college prep course. They try to get you ready. They let you like talk to people in different industries to figure out like what you want to do. And then just they try to get you prepared the most they can for college. And so it always got me thinking of like what I wanted to do in college. And I really had no idea. Like, I didn't know if I wanted to be like a doctor, a lawyer, like anything. I just know that I want to do something that like I would be passionate about and know I could excel at. And so when I was in
when were you first like exposed to it? Was it in school, like you were gonna say, or?
Yeah, I was in school. Yeah. And so actually it was in elementary school, sixth grade, going to junior high. They were like, oh, we need people for this program. And I was figuring, I was like, oh, like I might as well sign up for this program. It sounds pretty interesting, college prep. And then, yeah, ever since like the seventh grade, all the way through high school, like I was a part of that program.
That's amazing. Yeah. What did y'all do in that program that kind of caught your interest?
Yeah, so in that program, one was like trying to figure out, because I always knew I wanted to go to college. Like my parents are better than mine, like, okay, you should definitely try to go to college. And also I wanted to be the first person in my family to get a four-year degree. No one in my family has gotten a four-year degree, so I kind of wanted to be that first one. And so that program, when it taught us, like, okay, like you have like this little family feel, because you come up with the same people throughout junior high and high school. Obviously, I switched high schools because I moved from Arizona to Minnesota, but like even still, like that family aspect never changed. And so I think I like that too, because I love family feeling things. And so that program not only was trying to help you like with your career, but also kind of have that like family feel, that network that always like you can just go back to. So that's what I really enjoyed.
That's what's up. What made you what made you want to go to Iowa State in particular rather than another university? And most people, I don't know if most people know about this, but you actually walked on to the team originally when you came here at Iowa State, right?
Yeah, I definitely did. Yep.
What was that experience like? Did you just how'd you go from walking on to being a student that, you know, had that scholarship?
Yeah. So when I first came to the school, well, I guess to answer your first question, why did I even come to ISU in the first place? Yeah. And the reason why I came to ISU was because of the fact that I didn't know what engineering degree I really wanted to get into. I wanted to be very sure. And so with ISU, they have this system to where your first year, you don't have to pick exactly which major you want to do. You can still be in the College of Engineering, but you get to learn all the different types of engineering. And I really was like fascinated that, because I wanted to learn each and every one to see what was going to be the best for me. And so with that, it was kind of a no-brainer. After I took like a tour here, campus was beautiful. I came in the fall, so the trees were all changing colors, and I was just like, oh, this campus is beautiful. Like,
it's crazy in the spring, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and so I was just like, you know what? Like, this got to be the place I wanted to be at. And so, yeah, that was the reason why I came. It really wasn't like the track reason. It was more of like the educational reason is why I came to ISU. Track was kind of like
– kind of like a plus on top of that.
Exactly. And so with the track situation, I thought – I was hoping, like my freshman year, when I first got there, that I was going to be able to walk on the team. I thought, I was talking to a coach at the time, and I thought things were going to go well. Then eventually I was going to go on to the track team. And little did I know, that's not how the world works. So,
and so the track, what was going through your head when that happened, and what was that whole process like to kind of get to where you are now with the team?
It was definitely, it was stressful for sure. Like the first semester, fall semester, I was working out by myself. I was over at state gym just trying to put on some muscle, you know, because I always had a hard time putting on muscle. I was, yeah, just doing some little runs here and there, just trying to get myself, like, ready for, like, anything, you know, hoping for that time where they'd be calling me up saying, yeah, we'd like for you to try out. But obviously they never showed up. But then I got lucky, because at the state gym, I got approached by who now was graduating, but he was on the board for the run club at ISU, and he's like, hey, you know, my name's such and such, and he was like, why don't you come up for the track team, because I see you're running here, I think you'd be a good addition to the run club. So I was like, okay, this is cool, like I get to do some meets, and I think this will be a good time. And so that spring semester came around, and yeah, I was with the run club doing some indoor meets, and then I did tweak my ankle a little bit, so that kind of set me back a little bit. And during that period, though, I feel like things weren't looking as well for me. It was kind of even more stressful because I did sprain my ankle, and I was out for like at least a month, and I wasn't running. And then when I did come back from my ankle injury, my times weren't improving. I wasn't getting any faster, and I was just thinking to myself, I'm like, this might not be it, and I don't know what was going to happen. Now, I did come run club nationals, and I actually did hit some PRs, like, in that actual event. And the 400, I hit like a faster time in the 400, and then the 800, which is the event that I was really trying to look to get on the team for,
Yeah.
I didn't run an individual 800. I ran a 4x8, which is a relay. Four guys just running the 800 around the track, which is two laps on the outdoor track. And I ran a PR split time, as like they like to call it. And I was thinking to myself, oh, this might be it right here. Like, this could be the thing. But then I still didn't get, like, a message back. I was constantly emailing the coaches, letting them know, like, what I was doing. But then, like...
Did you say you emailed them back then?
I would say during the spring semester, not as much, because I wanted to wait until I got something to tell them. And so it was maybe, like, five times during the spring semester. But during the fall, it was a lot more. It was at least, like, 15 plus. Yeah. And so finally, though, like, come, like, early summer. But even then, early summer, I was thinking about transferring. Like, mm-hmm. I had plans to transfer to a different school. I was planning on transferring to North Dakota State University.
Did you
want to
transfer for strictly just for the purpose of being able to do track, or was it for another reason?
It was also the money reason. So mm-hmm. I didn't have any, like, big academic scholarships at ISU, and so the money issue was kind of coming in, because I was thinking when I first came in, I was like, this is a nice school, maybe I can get on the track team, I'll work my butt off, and then hopefully come away with a little bit of a scholarship. And oh. Obviously plans didn't go as well as I wanted to, so I was thinking to myself, this may not be the school for me. And then I did get an opportunity when the coaches did email me, because they used to see me at the track, because some of the track athletes sometimes have morning workouts. And so the head coach and one of the assistant coaches was there doing morning workouts. And so I didn't know if that was, like, the thing, if they were looking for me, or they're kind of just, like, you know, just there, kind of just, like, with their own guys, not even paying attention to us, you know. But one day I got the email from my coach now, and he was like, hey, we'd like for you to try out. We wanted to see if you can be beneficial with the team, and we got some good guys coming in. I think they'll help you out and all this good stuff. And then I had to make a decision then. I was like, okay.
What was going through your head at that time?
I was like, this is the opportunity I've been waiting for. I was like, this is what I want. But then I had to backtrack a little bit, because I was like, okay, like, the money issue, that's the reason why I was going to be leaving. Do I want to sacrifice another year tacking on the loans I've already, like, have, you know?
Yeah.
And then pursue my dream, or do I leave and, you know, try to go to a school that's going to be a little bit of a cheaper price? But I decided, I said, screw it. I'm all in. I need to, like, keep going with my dream. I need to pursue it. And so, yep, the rest is history from there. Now I'm on the team. I'm on scholarship. My first year I was a walk-on. And then after I dropped, I think, 12 seconds in the 800 for my PR. And so when that happened, I was, like, mind blown. I was like, this actually happened.
That's hustle right there. That's an amazing story, man.
Yeah, so it was crazy. So after my first year, I was able to get on a scholarship. And, yeah, the rest is history now.
So that's an insane story, from just being able to go from the running club and running, like, at the student org events, to even being able to go to nationals. And I was kind of watching this last year. Like, looking at the reports and everything, and you were going crazy, man. I want to ask you, leading up to nationals, it seemed like you were just dominating, like, you and the team were just dominating everything leading up to that point.
Yeah.
And then come nationals, I saw that you had a little slip up where you actually ended up tripping at nationals, and I was just kind of curious to ask you about, I looked it up, and it was the past race, your time itself, if you were ran the exact same time, would have been, like, first place. Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right. So can you walk me through, like, as an athlete, you know, you have these big moments, you have these big races that you kind of, like, been working so hard to get to that point, and, like, what kind of goes through your head when something like that happens? And more importantly, when something like that does happen to you, how are you able to mentally get back to that state of, like, I got to get right back to it?
Yeah, it's tough, because, like, especially that period too, like, that was my first time making an individual event, in, like, an 800. So I made it a lot of times in the relays. And so when I first got to national, that was my goal. I said, I'm going to nationals in my individual event. I'm going to go there. I'm going to place top 8, first team All-American. That's all I ever wanted. And so, like, yeah, when I fell, it was my first time. I was so devastated. Like, I'll tell you, I wasn't talking to nobody. Coaches, like, called me up. Like, I was silent. Like, I was just so mad, because, like, I worked so hard to get to this point. And now it's like, I felt like it just got taken away from me. we tried to like appeal, but that at that point they said like we couldn't allow you to get in the race because like you did come in like last place, all this other stuff. They gave me some excuses, and I was just like, okay, well, it's over. Like I should have had a different strategy. I was thinking, I should have went with this strategy instead of that one. So many things are going through my head. But then I just like told myself and said, well, I got one more year left. Like I have one more shot. This isn't the end, you know? And so I kind of used that mindset and used that to fuel me for next year. And I said, no matter what happens, like I'm going to grind like even harder this year. I'm going to work even harder the next year to make sure when I do go back, there's no question. I'm going to be the fastest person out on the field. And so, yeah, that was pretty much what I was doing in the fall. But obviously, we're going through a serious pandemic right now, so I wasn't able to showcase everything I had, but I was definitely trending in the right direction. So, but yeah, I was just like, I just told myself, like, I have one more year. I still have a shot. And that persistence and that thing drove me to work even harder the next year because I wanted to make sure, like, I had a dream of becoming a professional athlete. It was not gone. You know, it's still there. And so that's really what drove me to work even harder this semester to try to get to that point.
Hey, man, you're going to make it there. I believe it.
Yes, like, sir.
When you had the time that was already going to beat everyone, all you had to do was just do the same thing again. I'm curious, though. So, like, after do you have aspirations or, like, goals to try, you know, run at the Olympics at all?
Yeah, so that's one of my biggest goals.
If you're doing those type of times, like, that's the next step, right?
Yeah, it's definitely the next step next year. So the funny part is, though, like I didn't really have Olympic goals until I even got to college. Because, wow. Like, my times, like, looking at my times, it kind of was – I didn't really think of that for myself. I was thinking, well, even when I walked on the team, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to come in. And so my time before coming into the school in the 800 was a 159. So coming in, I'm thinking, okay, maybe I'll be lucky to break 150 by the time I'm even done with college. So when I broke in the first meet and then ran that 147, I was like, oh, like, I'm only like 2 seconds off, like, you know, qualifying for the Olympics. Like, this is crazy. And so that kind of triggered my mind. I was like, okay, maybe this is possible now. Like, yeah. I think I'm able to do it. And so, yeah, after that, I was kind of thinking, like, that's my next goal. Like, there's baby steps, though. You can't just be like, oh, I want to go to the Olympics, and that's it. You have to have, like, goals before then. Like, okay, if you don't want to go to the Olympics, you got to at least become, like, the Big 12 champ, which is our conference. We're in the Big 12 conference. So you got to at least be your Big 12 champ. That's all the Texas schools, Kansas schools, Oklahoma. And then the next step is being a national champion. Because if you can't even beat the people in college, what makes you think you're going to beat people in the pros? It's tough. I mean, you could have a bad day. That happens with all athletes. We all know that. But, like, still, you gotta be able to – in track and field, it's wins or losses. It's first place, second place, third place, you know. And so it's all individualized.
How many hours would you say you put in a week into your craft? Would you say 40 is, like, a reasonable number, or would you say it's more or less?
I think a little less. I would say, like, 30 hours. I would say 30, 35. Because, like, at first when I first got on the team, wasn't as much. But now, like, this – I've learned a lot throughout college and how you can be the best athlete in terms of nutrition, rehab, getting my body right. Like, it's not only just practicing. It's what you do after practice as well. And so doing all the necessary rehab and nutritional stuff is really, like, what kind of adds – tacks on the hours of, like, practice and everything. So it is a lot of work, even with school and engineering, but, like...
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Like, so you're doing 30 hours a week and you're an engineer? Because, yeah. Like, being an engineer alone, like, you could be an engineer, have no jobs, no nothing, and, like, you're just a student and you're already staying up till, like, 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, maybe even pulling an all-nighter once or maybe twice a semester just to make sure you're still on track and, like, getting your work done. What is it like to balance all that? And, like, how were you able to bounce all that and, like, till this day?
Yeah, it's definitely very tough, but very doable. It's really just time management. And so, like, when it comes to, like, practices, I was always scheduling things out. I knew kind of, I had, like, a routine going. I like routines. I don't like things that kind of go off the routine, even though sometimes it does happen in just life, you know? Yeah. And so I just had a routine for myself. I said, okay, I wake up in the morning. I may have morning practice. Got to take care of that. go to class, practice again in the afternoon, eat, and then homework. But it was definitely it was a lot of late nights, especially during exam weeks, because usually a lot of my exams kind of like were happening on the same week, so then you have to study for multiple exams. So that kind of sucked. But at the same time, no, it's really just time management. Like, people ask me all the time, like, oh, yeah, how are you, like, able to manage the time? It's just, like, it's really just, like, how much you want to, like, sacrifice other stuff, you know? Because
sure.
I think of it three ways. You have, a student-athlete has to balance the athletic life, the academic life, and then the social life. It's very hard to do all three. And so I try to, like, balance mainly, like, two of them at the same time. And that's academics and athletics. And so with that, I was really just trying to manage my time throughout the week and just make sure to focus on those two things. And then, like, just make sure I manage my time well with, like, using a calendar. And then just making sure I remind myself whenever I have stuff that needs to be due. Just put on my phone a little reminder that says, like, hey, you got this paper due today, or you got this test due today. Just stuff like that, because that really, like, helps me out remember, like, okay, I got stuff going on. And then it really just keeps me in check to make sure that I get everything done, because I wasn't going to leave college without a degree. I had to get a degree. So I made sure I got that.
Love it. I curiosity, when you say you're putting in 30 hours and, like, you know, some of that time is dedicated strictly just for you running. But when you talk about what you do outside of that, like, can you go deeper a little bit into what you're actually doing outside of that time when you're not running? And yeah, like, what advice would you have for someone that, you know, is trying to be like trying to become a better runner?
Yeah. I would say for those people to really, like, look at yourself and figure out what is the most thing you need to work on. For me, as an 800 runner, I had a little bit of speed kind of going into, like, the event. I know I'm a speed-based 800 runner. And so my weakness on that side is strength. And also, I came into the school, like, I wasn't the biggest guy. I was definitely very skinny. Like, I was probably, like, coming in as a popsicle stick. Like, no joke. And so I'm just like, okay, I probably need to beef up a little bit. So that's why, like, the first couple of years, I was definitely, like, trying to gain a whole lot of weight, because I needed that strength to be able to finish off, like, the last 200. Every 800-meter runner knows that last 200 meters of the race is probably the worst part of the entire race. So it's just being able to finish. And so I feel like my advice to other athletes trying to, like, become a better runner is just really look at what is necessary for yourself and what you need to work on, whether it is to gain weight, whether it is to look at the strength side, whether it is speed-wise. And then also make sure to look at your nutrition. I used to snack on a bunch of junky food all the time my first couple of years. And I think you really do. Oreos, man. Double stuff, though. You can't go regular Oreos. Oh, definitely the double stuff.
You've seen the triple-double ones?
Oh, I've seen those. No, that's a little too much. It do go crazy, but it's a little too much. But yeah, double stuff Oreos. I used to snack on those all the time, man. And yeah, I had to cut that out. I had to cut it out because I was like, if I really want to be the best, I gotta train like the best. And so I made sure to cut some of those foods out. Now every once in a while, you gotta reward yourself. You know, sometimes you gotta get the Oreos, get it whatever you like, your little snack, go to snack is. And so, but yeah, for the most part, though, I was definitely taking the nutrition very seriously. And then I think a lot of people also do skip rehab as well.
When you say nutrition, is there, like, particular, like, things you try to get more of? Like, are you saying, like, where are you typically eating, you know?
Yeah, so.
And how important is that? Like, particularly, like, are you someone that's eating a lot of meat? How important is it to also, like, have, you know, like, vegetables in your diet too? And are you someone that's, like, very heavy on that, or just a mixture of both?
Well, I think it really depends on the person, because there's also vegans and vegetarians out there. So you got to substitute. If you can't eat meat, you have to substitute that. And so for me, I'm not vegan or vegetarian. So I do like chicken and fish. And those are, like, the main things I like to eat a lot this past year. That was really what I was trying to focus on, was eating a lot more chicken, making sure I eat a lot more fish, either salmon, tilapia, and then also, like, pasta as well, because pasta is really good when it comes to carbs, and it gives you the energy. And you want to eat, like, a more of, like, a high-carb lunch before you go on to practice or whatever time you get about to practice. It gives you that energy that you need. And in terms of, like, the vegetables and fruit, I was definitely eating a lot more of those, because that really does give you like the extra like vitamins and all the good nutrients that you need in your body to be able to recover from workouts and everything. And also giving you energy too, because bananas and potatoes are actually really good like sources of potassium, and that's that energy that athletes need in order to keep their make sure that the workouts are going to be good, they keep that high energy and they don't get tired quickly in the workout. And so I made sure to put more of those. And I'm not a banana eater. I honestly don't really like bananas that much. But I was like, if I gotta do this in order to get better, man, like I'm gonna need those bananas, you know what I'm saying? So
so you're running, you know, you're eating right, and then you also mentioned rehab. What does rehab look like? Are like you doing yoga, or is it just like simple stretches, or what is that like for you?
Me, it's just like making sure that stretches, and then yoga. I personally don't do yoga. I probably should do a little bit of yoga because it really does. It is really good after a workout because it stretches out a lot of parts of your body. But personally, I don't do it. But a lot of other stuff that I do is also work on my knees. You know, I'm a tall person. I like to say I have old man knees. And so,
how do you work on your knees? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so you kind of like focus on stuff that's actually around your knees, not like really like so like taking doing different squats. So like one time I had peritonitis, and so in order to work on that, I was doing like some a little bit of squatting, like single leg squats, and then make sure to stretch out the areas that are around it, like the quad, the hamstring, and the calves, and also work on my hips too, because my hips, I didn't even realize like were like super tight, and that was also another reason why I was getting like peritonitis, because like my hips were like they were really tight. I never used to stretch those muscles out, so it was that's what one thing that I was like telling you earlier, that there was a lot of learning I had to do while I was in college in terms of being like a great athlete, because like I didn't realize I needed to stretch out those muscles really. Like I kind of did like a little stretch, but like not really. And
would
so
you
like
say the majority of that learning was predominantly on the rehab side, or like the actual like form side when it came to running?
Yeah, definitely like on the rehab side, because that also too translated to my form of my running. So when I was rehabbing, they told me like, oh yeah, you got to stretch out this muscle, you got to do this and that. And I was taking all that in and I was realizing like, oh, like this stuff actually helps me out. Like my form looks better. Like I feel like I can drive easier. And when it comes down to the last 200, when you're going to need all the strength you can get and you shouldn't be breaking down your form as much, that's like the one period that really helped me out the most. And so I realized, like, okay, this is what I need to do and this is what I'm going to keep working on as I'm in the season, and then going into the season, like making sure I don't forget that type of stuff.
For sure. And then how often did you like typically work out? Cause like you also don't want to burn yourself out. Like you can't be, you know, running every single day. Like what was your balance like?
Yeah. So I did run just about every day except Sundays.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And wow. So yeah. And then we sometimes have 2-a-days. So then you run in the morning time, either like, 6 a.m., 7 a.m., 8 a.m., whatever time like works well for your schedule and your classes. And then I come back in the afternoon and then I hit another run and do another like workout or weightlifting exercise. So it's like, 2 days is definitely not like it's definitely a common thing that you will definitely have to do that if you're like a college athlete. But well, for me, it's just making sure like
I got a good balance. Like you personally, do you think that's a good balance for college athletes, or that's something that you think might lead to more like burnt out athletes?
It could definitely lead to burnout if you continue doing that like all the way through championship season. Like I would say, like you need to do that up to a certain point, you know. And it's definitely it helps you out a lot, because especially for me as an 800 runner, I needed that because I needed that strength background, because that was kind of like my weakness I was talking about earlier. And so with that, I think those 2-a-days definitely did help me out. But if you're not that type of person, like, who needs to do 2-a-days, like, then don't do it. Like, do something that's going to work best for you. And that's one thing I like about being a track and field athlete. It's really individualized. So it's individualized what works for you.
Most definitely. Also, just to kind of switch gears or something I wanted to ask you about, do you watch The Shop at all with LeBron James?
Yes, I do. Yep.
Do you see the episode where they had I believe it was the mayor of California or the governor of California. There was a huge change they were implementing with the universities there, where it pretty much, correct me if I'm wrong, but it pretty much just stated that, you know, they would start paying athletes, like student athletes in particular. And it was a huge change that was just going to take place for that state. And in that conversation, he said the biggest pushback he was getting was from every other university and college president outside of that state. They're calling, they're saying like, hey, don't do this, don't take this out. Whereas student athletes, this is something that they've been pushing for a while. And like, it's crazy to think that at one point there've been, you know, athletes that are like celebrities having, you know, items that were sold with their name on it, yet they don't get any sort of commission or any sort of money off of it. And again, like, although they call it a free education, like, you're working for this. Like you said, you put in about 30 plus hours a week. And out of curiosity, I think it's something that might be coming to states all across the US and hopefully even here in Iowa. But I'm just curious to, you know, get your take as a student athlete. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think honestly it's a great idea. And I think California is definitely like that state that kind of like is like the catalyst. They're usually the ones that kind of like start some. And I think it was good for them to like push that law to be like passed, because it really started the conversation. We always started like, everybody was always asking, should athletes get paid? Should athletes get paid? Like, is it a good idea? Is it a bad idea? And so like, it was just a lot of talk. And so there really was like no action. And yeah, for me, I believe athletes should definitely get paid, because especially like football players and basketball players, like NCAA profits off so much of what they do in the likeness. And then recently we've seen, I don't know if you know him, but Zion Williamson, that guy was like an icon. He was like the LeBron James of all era. So
no, for real, like when he's so there was one game, I think it was against UNC, where he was wearing some Nikes and he busted his shoe, and just him busting his shoe alone had dropped Nike stock by millions and millions of dollars. And this is someone that's just a college athlete, and it's like insane to think about.
But exactly,
how is he not getting paid for that? Like, just him wearing Nike alone boosted their stock, because when that happened, like, they were scared that he might switch shoes.
Exactly. Like, just that is a prime example of why athletes should get paid. And I was trying to find a way, because obviously when it comes to schools, it would be really tough for schools, I think, to pay athletes, just because they do make a lot of money. Don't get me wrong. But they also spend a lot of money to try to, like, with buildings, try to build up their athletic lifestyle and all this different stuff. And so I feel like what they're looking at trying to do now, which is athletes to get paid based off their likeness. So like, they can appear on advertisements. They just want to have like, they're looking at maybe trying to do like, not with the school logo and stuff like that, but like those type of likeness, I feel like athletes should get paid for that, because you in college, Zion Williamson had like, I don't know, like 2 million plus followers just in college. You know, and then other athletes, football athletes. Yeah, it's his name. So why can't he make money off his name? That's my main concern. I'm just like, this doesn't make sense to me. Hey, this should have already happened, you know? And it's kind of sad that it's taken this long to finally figure it out. But I think we're trending in the right direction, though. And I think we're eventually, you're going to see, probably in the next year or two, honestly, that there's going to be a change out there, and the athlete's going to stop making name off the likeness.
For sure. I'm personally excited to see it, because I think the way universities are structured is like something I've always had issues with, like whether it's just, you know, athletics alone or education as a whole. Like, we're even starting to see more trade schools come up nowadays, or like, you know, someone might be going to software engineering instead of doing, you know, 4 or 5 years at a university and dropping all that tuition. You can just drop literally like 8K within a year, have that certification, and have the exact same role you would have had if you had a bachelor's degree from your respective university. I wanted to also ask you, what do you think is the value prop of college? Because, you know, like, you talk about your upbringing, like how much we value education, but, you know, there's also multiple ways to educate yourself. But sometimes in our cultures, we always like, always say, yeah, we want to educate ourselves, but we gotta go to college. What's your take on that particular?
Yeah, and I was watching your podcast episode when you did mention that question, and I was really thinking about myself, and I feel like it's definitely whatever's best for you. Like, obviously my parents were like, instilled in me college, like, we gotta go to college because you can figure out what you want to do, and then, you know, life will take care of itself. But I think nowadays I'm starting to see that, like, that's not really the case. Like, you don't have to be, or you don't have to go to college, you know, to become, like, let's say a millionaire, a billionaire. Like, you're really going to start a business even before you even get to college, and you can learn on the fly. Because, really, even when you're done with college, it's not like you got to stop educating yourself. You're going to keep educating yourself afterwards, and you don't have college to be there to kind of like go to class and all this other stuff. I feel like, so if you're able to keep educating yourself after college, you should be able to educate yourself beforehand. And you don't even need to go to college to even educate yourself. As you said, with software engineers going to trade school, you know, yeah, they can go there, they get the education, and then they can start work whatever time once they complete the going to trade school. Like, there's so many different ways and so many different avenues you can go to try to, like, really educate yourself. And as long as you have a passion for it, honestly, and you have the time commitment to just put in, just go ahead and do it. You know, go ahead and do it. And so I just feel like, yeah, college, you don't need to go to college, you know, to be successful. It's a mindset, I feel like, that you want to make yourself better, that you want to be successful. And there's definitely multiple different avenues, I feel like, nowadays for you to go and be successful, whatever way that is, either going to college, trade school, or just like trying to like pick up a hobby that you feel like that can move, like can go on to something else, you know?
So. Facts for sure. And thank you for tuning into the podcast. Appreciate that. I had a follow-up on that. Another thing too is not just when we look at like, you know, education, but also athletics. Like typically it was always said that like when you want to make it to the pros, college is also right there. It's that stepping stone. But like for some sports now, like the NBA, what they're starting to do is like they're actually removing that rule now, saying you don't have to go to college if you want to go to the pros. And on top of that, you have the option of either going to play overseas or coming into their D league or their G league. And it's like similar to how, you know, soccer structured in like Spain or England, where they have multiple leagues where, you know, you have the top dogs, like in the Premier League, like for example, we got the Chelsea, Manchester United, but below that there's at least, I think, three or four more leagues, and you can work your way up, and like, you'll see young folks do that. And the Major League Soccer here is starting to do the same thing. They're building a second league. Do you see something like that being implemented into track and field at all? Because a lot of sports are starting to find their way around the colleges. They're trying to say, like, no, we shouldn't set up a wall for these athletes if this is exactly what they want to do. Because some, like for you, you're a unique scenario because you knew you want to be an engineer. Mm-hmm. There's some athletes where they come in with the intent of, I only want to be an athlete.
Right. And so I feel like with track and field, I don't see that happening because in track and field, it's a little different. So, like, when it comes to Major League Soccer, like, there's always, like, a kind of, like, a league around it where, like, the actual organization itself, the private organization would sign athletes to come on, and they wouldn't have shoe deals or any of that type of stuff. In track and field, professionally, it's a little different because most athletes, when they come out, they have a shoe deal usually when they're professional. Like, either that is with Nike, Adidas, the big wigs, or, like, even smaller ones like Brooks or – they have another one with Reebok. And so it's those type of things. They have some type of sponsor. That's how they get to some of these meets and able to pay for some of those trips. It's really tough for a track and field athlete to just say, oh, I want to be a professional athlete and just kind of go out and run, because there's no organization that really pays it unless you make it to the World Championship meets or the Olympics. Then Team USA would take over and actually pay for everything. But before then, all the meets leading up to there.
Yep. I'm sorry, Coach. I got a quick question. So. Yep. I actually didn't know that. So, like, you're telling me when in track and field, strictly outside of endorsements, there's no other source of funding? And, like, also for Olympics, how is Team USA just covering, like, you going to the Olympics, you know, like, you're lounging, your food, but do they actually, like, pay you on top of just covering the expenses, or is it they just cover the expenses?
Well,
what is the pay structure like when it comes to being, like, a track and field athlete at that level? Yeah.
So there's multiple different ways to get actually paid in track and field. One main one is obviously the endorsement deal. And the second one is actually like appearances or like just the meet itself will pay athletes depending on what place to get into. So the main circuit that a lot of professionals try to get into is called the Diamond League. And so every time you come to the Diamond League event, there's like a pay structure for people who get placed like first through eighth. And so that's like the meets people try to get to. But most of the time, you kind of need that endorsement deal because they only take the high caliber athletes. And then
how there's other meets. For first place placement for at the Diamond League?
Don't quote me, but I believe it's about $10,000, I want to say. Okay. I believe it's $10,000 for first place. And it kind of trickles down to like $2,000 or $1,000 for eighth place. And so, but that's that one. But most meets, like here in the U.S., there's some meets that actually pay professional athletes, and then they give out like a $1,000 or $2,000 check. But let's say you don't have an endorsement deal. Those $1,000, $2,000 checks ain't going to cut it, because that only happens like maybe like once or twice a month. So,
what are the size of endorsement deals like for some of the bigger folks in track and field?
You definitely can get to six-figure salaries. And I think even some, depending on what company you are, you could get to like seven figures. But if you rely on your endorsement deals to like get you places, or like rely on that as your sole income, that's going to be a problem, because like there's a lifestyle obviously you want to live at. But if you want to make more money and invest in and try to brand yourself, you're gonna need more money. And so that comes to appearances, and then also getting like, I don't know, TV commercial deals, trying to get stuff outside of just like your shoe deal, I guess you can call it your shoe deal. And so that's why I feel like with track and field athletes, that even though you do have your shoe deal, you can't always rely on that. You gotta look at other ways to figure out, how am I gonna brand myself in order to get money? Because track and field don't last forever. Let's be honest. It really doesn't. So you got to find a way to be successful outside of that. And so
what would you say is like the time span for a typical athlete's career in track and field?
Good question. I would say the good ones, 8 years. Like the real good ones.
Really?
Yeah, eight.
That's short. Yeah,
8, 10 years. Like this, usually I would say sprinters, I feel like for me as a sprinter, like when you're fast, you're fast. So so when you get to that level, like, and you're running like a really fast time, say in 100 meters, it's kind of hard. You're going to get slower, but like it's going to be kind of hard for you to get slow enough to the point where like they're just going to cut your shoe deal. And for like the longer distances as well, like, yeah, for longer distances, you can't go on to the marathon. And marathons, they have a lot of money in the marathons as well. I feel like for me, like you see a lot more sprinters lasting, I feel like, a little bit longer than distance runners, at least a distance runner in their events, like the 5K and 10K. You see them for like a few years, kind of like, okay, this is the guy you need to watch for. But then eventually there's somebody that kind of like one-ups them. And then this person's kind of like the new face of like the distance races. And so I feel like it's like always alternating and changing. Now in sprint events, it does too. There's usually that one, it's usually like alternating, but I feel like with sprinting, it's just like when you're fast, you're fast. You know, like it's kind of hard to like just digress for after you've been that fast, you know?
The numbers don't lie, yeah.
Yeah.
But do you think there's more money in the like this sprint game, or like, you know, long distance running for like the athlete themselves?
It depends. I think honestly the real where a lot of the money's at is marathons.
Really?
Marathons are like really big. You can make a lot of money off the marathon. And sprinting, obviously,
6 figures or like 7 figures?
6 figures for sure. And then like really honestly in terms of prize money, if you like win like a lot of the marathons, say like you win like five or like the major ones, that's easy seven figures. And
outside of college, once you go to the pros, is there like national leagues, or is it just individual events you qualify for?
Once you turn professional, it's all you. So it's your individual event you're trying to qualify for. And so they have this meet called the USATF National Outdoor and Indoor National Championship, where athletes try to go to in order to qualify for Worlds. Mm-hmm. And so USATF is like the organization, I guess you can say. It's like the NBA, WNBA, NFL. That is like our like organization.
But they don't have like that type of structure where it's like teams or anything like that. It's just you. You're just running the whole show yourself. You're signing up yourself. All that.
Well, actually, there's still agents out there. So there's still sporting agents, and also there's groups. So a lot of like the bigger companies, well, actually, even the smaller companies too, they have them as well. They have like their groups where they sign athletes and they want the athletes to come out there to train. So Nike has a couple groups. Actually, I think they have a few groups out there that they have where athletes come and try to kind of like train there, either in Portland, Oregon, or other places around the U.S. And then Adidas has their group, like in Florida and other places around. And like, it's not even just like athletes in the U.S. because like obviously track and field is a world like wide sport.
Yeah, it's worldwide sport.
Yeah, so you got other people in different countries that have their own groups, like in Norway or wherever part of the country where athletes kind of like train at. And so it really just depends. Like, and then also too, some people even go back to the college coaches. They feel like the college coaches, like, you know, they got to the level where they're at. Why not stick with them? So it really just depends, like, on the athlete, where they want to go to. If you want that group setting that you kind of had in college, and they have groups for you, they have groups like that. But if you want to kind of, like, have, like, a one-on-one individual thing, and, oh, like, not have that many people in your group, like, maybe three or four, there's definitely stuff like that, too. So it really just depends, like, on the track and field athlete, what they want to do.
Do you think there will ever, like, maybe down the road be a organizational structure for the sport that would look similar to what we see in other sports, where it's, like, more team-based, and you'd actually have, like, teams you could sign with type deal, and they'd be paying you for, you know, just being on the team, like, salaried contracts at all? Do you think that's feasible, I guess, maybe?
I really don't think so, because it's not much of a team sport, if that makes sense. Once you get on a professional level, like, even though the NFL, NBA, like, it's still a little individualized, because you still have to brand yourself, and they can, NFL, they can cut you if you're not doing so well, all this other stuff. But, like, in track and field, it's just way too individualized for them to, like, organize teams. And so I feel like, it doesn't make too much sense to, like, have, like, teams, I guess you can say, for a track and field, because it's just way too individualized, and there's a lot of events that they have to cover in track and field.
Do they, would you say in the college phase, they teach the track and field athletes pretty well about, like, the business structure of the sport after college? Or is that something you'd say you're only learning by just getting connected with, like, other athletes?
Yeah, I would say for me, like, my personal, like, trying to, like, learn about the professional realm, I would say it's a little bit of both. Really, like, the athlete realm, you really learn a lot more from, like, the actual athletes themselves, because a lot of the college coaches may have not even ran professionally. So they can't really tell you, like, oh, this is how it's going to be, this blah, 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 because there's just not a whole lot out there. And so then you kind of have to learn from, like, other athletes. And so there's actually one, he's now retired, but, like, a professional athlete that was before, he kind of has a YouTube channel, Nick Simmons, and he kind of, like, explains a little bit of how, like, the professional, like, world is going. And other athletes, he's starting to see more track and field athletes kind of, like, put down a YouTube page too, like, okay, this is how, like, the professional life is like. This is kind of, like, in the business side. This is how you're going to make money, all the other good stuff. And so you're starting to see more of that, because, like, it's really tough. You really don't know. You kind of almost going in blind when it comes to, like, a professional track and field. Like, you just get good one day, and then, like, oh, like, I can become a professional, and you kind of just dive into it. And so it's like, yeah. And so I think I'm glad that they're starting to do this, because I think before you even get to that professional realm, you need to educate yourself on, like, how it is, how it's structured, and how that it really is a business. So you have to market yourself well. You have to realize that, like, at any given point, if you're not performing, they can cut your contract. And, you know, and it's just like, it can be as simple as that. And so it's pretty crazy. It's kind of cutthroat, I feel like, in track and field, but at the end of the day, it's a business, you know. And they got the top guys are going to make their money, and the bottom guys, is going to be a struggle until they can get to that top level.
Yeah, for sure. And you're in a unique scenario, because on top of being in that realm and learning about that professional side, you're an engineer, you're also learning about the professional side of engineering. Mm-hmm. What was that route like for you about learning? Because, like, you know, you mentioned you're going to be the first person in your family to have a 4-year degree. So, like, similar to me, coming into college, I did know a little bit, because when we first came back, my mom went back to college. So she's going back. I'm seeing the things she's kind of doing. But at the same time, like, she's just coming back home, cooking a meal, and straight back to the library. We're not really chopping it up like that. And I'm just going to school back and forth. And as soon as she graduates is when I enter. But I'm learning through some of the things she didn't know about and things like that. But for yourself, like, I know for me, it was still difficult, like, trying to figure out, how am I going to figure out this whole career set of engineering? How do I go about getting my internships? How do I go about securing a full-time job, right? And, like, what do these full-time jobs look like? Is this something I'm actually going to like, or all that? But how do you go about figuring out that whole process for yourself?
Well, thankfully, at ISU, they have this club called Nesby.
Shout out to Nesby.
Yeah, shout out to Nesby, always. I love that club. And, yeah, that club really helped me figure out how to secure the internship, and then going forward, how to secure a full-time job. Going in, even beefing up my resume. They are having, bringing in professionals that even talk about, like, how they go about recruiting. And so with that, it really like opened my mind up to, okay, I really got to take notes, because as you said, like, as I said earlier, like, I'm a first time, like, I will be the first time graduating with my degree. So I didn't have any prior knowledge going in to how to like figure out how to get an internship, how to get a full-time job. And my resume wasn't really that good coming into college either. It's pretty bad. And so with that, I was able to learn a lot when it comes to like resume, how to go through like even like the elevator speech, like the little 30-second elevator speech when you first walk up to the company and have to give like your little rundown of yourself. And so that I had to work a lot on that. I was in the mirror talking to myself, giving, going down my elevator speech. And so it really just like put in perspective, like, okay, I see these guys and what they're doing. Let me pick the brain a little bit. The NSBE presidents, like, well, dude, yourself, I know I've asked you a lot of questions, and like other people on the cloud that really helped me out to try to figure out like, okay, how can I make myself professional in engineering psych? Because I knew track wasn't going to last forever, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to get to that professional route. So just in case that doesn't work out, I need to make sure I set myself up for success in the professional realm of the engineering realm. And NSBE really was a big part of that.
That's a hell of a backup plan, man. Yeah, for those that don't know, by the way, NSBE is the National Society of Black Engineers, and the mission of the whole org is to increase the number of culturally responsible Black engineers who excel academically, succeed professionally,
and positively impact the community. Yes, sir. And
one thing I want to also follow up with you is you've had some internships too with Land O'Lakes. Can you walk through the process of getting that internship, and what was that process like for you?
Yeah.
And also, what was it like when you got there? Was it what you kind of expected, or was it completely different to see what the corporate world was like?
Yeah, definitely was different. And getting the actual internship itself. So the crazy part about the whole thing, I really haven't told anybody about this. So normally when I get to the career fair, there's a couple of companies I like to talk to before I talk to the quote unquote actual companies I really wanted to work at. And Land O'Lakes was that company that I was like, oh, let me just try it out and just, you know, we'll see where it goes type of thing. And then when I went up there, I was actually liking, like, the mission. Like, everything was going smooth. I really liked the mission. And I got an interview. So I was like, okay, this is cool. And, like, I wanted to see, like, how it was going to go. And when I got to the interview, the crazy part is everybody else was dressed up in suits. I was the one person that walked in was just jeans and like just a nice button up, because they told me in the email that I was supposed to do that. But then like everybody else just dressed up in suits. I was thinking to myself, oh man, I'm not getting this job. It's over. It's wraps. But yeah, everything went smoothly. I got the job. And then it was actually my first time working at a corporate headquarters. Mm-hmm. I worked at John Deere internship previously that previous summer, but I was in a manufacturing facility. So the working in the corporate America was definitely an eye opener. And it was pretty cool, honestly. I really liked it. And I love being able to get up and just wearing, like, my dress shirt. And obviously, I didn't wear a tie every single day. But, like, just getting up, getting dressed up, going there is honestly a really good experience. But the project itself that I was working on, because I was doing more of a supply chain. Yeah. And I was doing a supply chain product. I was a supply chain analyst intern. And I'm an industrial engineer. So I had no prior knowledge to supply chain. I took one class, a beginner class, just because I wanted to make sure like I knew a tad bit. But honestly, going to that job, I didn't know nothing. And so I really learned a lot of stuff on the fly, because it's really how I went about my project was asking a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. Like whenever I had an issue or a problem that I came across like in my project, I just made sure like to find the right person to ask the question to. Because yes, you want to ask people questions, but yeah, make sure you go to the right person as well. You can't just go to anybody and just ask the question. And mm-hmm. So I want to make sure I went to the right person, because not only was I working in my department, but I had to ask questions for people in multiple different departments. I was like co-working in like different departments to figure out the best way to make my project happen. And so I feel like, asking questions, that was one thing that I really like had to learn. And also to like learn when you just go in, learn the different coding stuff that I also had to know too. I had to like learn SQL. That was one thing I had to learn, because with my project, there was a software I was using called Tableau. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's kind of like visual representation of like take Excel data, put it in the Tableau, and then you're able to visually show kind of like what your data is saying. And so that's why I had to learn that, and then also learn the SQL, because a lot of stuff that I needed to manipulate in the Tableau software, the only way you can do that is through SQL. So I had to learn a little bit of SQL, Tableau. I had no idea what Tableau was until I got to that job, so I had to learn that as well. And then there's a lot of stuff on Microsoft Excel that even I didn't even know. So it was just a lot of learning. It was a major learning curve, but I got lucky that the people around me were really helpful, and I really was trying to pick their brain a lot. And then not only like do you need to do your project too, one thing I learned is that networking factor. Not only just making sure you have a good project, but networking around you to make sure that everybody kind of like knows your name a little bit, and also telling them something that's like almost memorable about you. So they make sure when they're thinking about the person that they want to hire back, you're the first person that comes on their mind, because they're thinking, oh, I remember this guy's project. Here's a really cool person to talk to, and he's such and such and such. And so that was one thing that I had to learn, because I never really networked with anybody. I kind of just like, when they were there, and then I moved on. So like trying to keep that connection was really tough for me, and having to keep up with emails and all this other stuff. But I think I'm just learning the little basics, and I've gotten a lot better at that. So I feel like, yeah, it was a lot of learning my first internship there, but it was definitely very helpful in the end, though.
No, that's facts. Like, to reiterate the importance of like asking questions is huge. And like, it comes back to also when you are asking your questions, going to the right people. And it's funny you made that point of like how important it is to network. Like, actually, when I had my first internship, I was in the same boat. I had an internship at GE Aviation, and before I'm coming there, I've never worked with a jet engine in my life. And I'm thinking I'm going to come in and they're going to have me working on jet engines. I don't even get to work with the jet engines. So like, I tried to read up on them, like, you know, 3 weeks prior, just watching YouTube videos, just trying to read, like, okay, how does this work? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know how the engine works. And I'm just like, I get there and I'm like, crap, like, okay, I'm going to need to find somebody, like, latch on to somebody. And I ended up doing that. And it was like the first time I started doing that, it's like they just pretty much told me, sat down, like, this is a learning process. And if you're someone that is a learner and you're like going to ask questions, you will be successful. But one person that saw me always ask questions, he sat me down. He's just like, hey, I see that, you know, you're working hard, but I need you to understand something. And I'm like, what's that? And he was just like, when it comes to success, just, you know, in corporate America, there's three factors that decide that. It's your performance, your integrity, and your exposure. And he was telling me 60% of it is your exposure. And he was just like, what I want you to do is start setting up meetings with your boss's boss and meeting with those type of people and just simply just asking them for career advice. Because it's one thing to understand how your job works, but then to also be able to understand how this organization functions and does the things it does is a whole nother thing. Because we as interns or like, you know, entry employees, we work in the business rather than on the business, which is a huge shift in mindset. But being able to talk to people like that is, it does give you that huge shift. And like, I know for you, you were able to get in touch with some folks that, you know, were kind of higher up in the business, but what were kind of some of the lessons you learned from those people, and how did you get in touch with them?
Yeah, very similar to you. And I'll ask you, answer the last question first before I answer the first one. So I asked you how I got in touch with them. My manager, it was actually very similar to yours. He told me that I had the network, and he actually sat me down one day. We were having a meeting. He said, boom, I got a list of people for you to email. You have to email these people, talk to them, set up a meeting, and get back to me by the end of the week. And I was like, oh, like, it was a list of like 10 or 15 people. And the funny part was, it wasn't even just people in his department. It was people in all different functions of like the business, because I didn't realize that like, not only do you need to know your job really well, but you need to like be able to broaden your knowledge to understand all aspects of the business. Because if you want to get to the level that, let's say you want to be underneath the CEO or even a CEO of a business, you can't just know one part of the business. You have to know everything. All of it. And even though you're working mainly in this one part of the business, that one part of the business will at some point need to rely on another business. So you need to understand what that other side of the business is and be able to figure out which people you need to ask questions towards. And so, yeah, those lists of people, I start off with those. And I'm kind of just like on my manager's level. And then some were like my boss, my manager's boss. So talking to them, And then those people were like, oh, yeah, you should get in touch with this person. So then I got in touch with some other people. But there was one, you remember, Yanni was a person that I went over to Nesby. Yeah. How I got in touch with him, I literally simply sent them an email one day.
Can you give a background on who Yanni is for those that don't know?
Yeah. So Yanni Dubé, he's the chief supply chain officer over at Land O'Lakes. And so if you look at like the, I guess you call the tree of the business, you have the CEO, and then right underneath the CEO is the chief like supply chain officer. And then you also have chief financial officer and all the other senior VPs, all the good stuff. And so, yeah, he's actually one person that, he just loves talking to like young interns. Yeah. And so I just sent him an email one day.
Were you nervous when you first tried getting in contact with him? Because you're thinking to yourself, like, yo, this dude's like, like, he don't got time for me. You know what I mean? Like, you think this dude's really high up? You going to talk to an intern?
No, I set up a month in advance. Because if you look at his schedule, his calendar is all booked up. I just found one little sliver of, like, 30 minutes. I just booked it. And, like, I literally looked away, too. Like, I looked away and I just, like, pressed the button. And just hoped. I was like, please.
That's hilarious.
I hope this meeting sets up. And then, yeah, literally like the next day, he emailed me. He was like, yeah, let's do it. He accepted it. And, yeah, ever since then, like,
how did the conversation go?
It actually went really well. At first, I was super nervous. Cause I was like, I mean, the chief supply chain officer, like, this guy's like, he's high up. But, no, it's definitely a very good conversation. And I just kind of picked his brain. I asked for advice. I said, hey, like, for a young person like me, that's looking to inspire to be in the position that you're on today, how did you get there? And like, what advice do you give? What would you give to me? And he just said, just keep broadening your knowledge and just like network and expose yourself. And that exposure word coming out again, because like, not only do you need to know, like you need to be very good at your role, but like, yeah, you gotta be able to expose yourself because you never know when someone might need you to fulfill a role. And you gotta be open. You gotta be open-minded when it comes to roles too, because you may not want to work in a certain role, but you may need that role later on when you get to the level that he was at, because you need to pick their brain on something that needs to further the business. And so that's one thing that I was like, okay, like I need to be more open-minded, because like I have roles that I want to be in. But
what are those roles for you?
For me, I like my goal in the professional realm outside of athletics is to be like a VP at a Fortune 200 company, technology company. And so in order for me to get to that role, hopefully it'd be at Nike. That's my dream company. That's where I want to be at. I want to impact the sports world. And so for me, I need to learn how to broaden my knowledge, not only for like in supply chain, but in other roles as well, like manufacturing, warehousing, even the business realm. I need to learn more about business, because even though you get to the VP level, you got to understand the business.
I think like, you might be the first athlete to ever be not only just sponsored by Nike, but also be put employed as an engineer by Nike. That's history right there.
That would be crazy, man. If I could pull that off, man, that would be crazy. I'd be very proud, because like that's, I know track and field is not going to last forever. I got to find success outside of that. And so that was my main thing when I was looking into, like, not even a sports realm. And I love sports.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to find a way to coincide the two, engineering and sports. And I feel like Nike is the best way to do that.
I'm just really curious, like a lot of athletes today aren't educated unless you've had like a conversation with someone or someone pulled you aside about athletics being a great, you know, a great avenue for, you know, pursuing your passion or even like, you know, financially taking care of yourself. But that conversation of this is temporary, and like you said, the career can just be anywhere, like on average, you're saying about 8 to 10 years is just the average. Like you're in your 20s right now. By the time you're in your 30s, you could live a whole nother 30 years and like, you know, like you'll still be alive. What was it that like gave you that type of mindset? Cause a lot of athletes they don't think like that. And that's a very unique mindset to have as an athlete. Cause like it teaches you to understand like your value.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think the real thing was looking at what professional athletes do. I looked at podcasts, I went on YouTube videos, trying to educate myself. Okay. Like if I do get to that level, like, and I always wanted to like have a successful career. That's just what I always wanted to do. I've been talking about it ever since I was young. Like, I just wanted to be successful. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I just wanted to be successful whenever I did. And so I said, okay, if I want to become a professional athlete, I know it's not going to last long. Like, how can I figure out to get that long-lasting success? And so I looked at a lot of podcasts, and one I'm looking at right now is called I Am the Athlete, and it's by Brandon Marshall. He used to be a football player on the Giants, the Jets, the Dolphins, long time. And he was even discussing on his podcast, he was saying that, like, less than, he said, 10% of, like, professional football players know what, like, financial literacy. Like, they know about financial stuff. And I was like, that's crazy, because, like, imagine you go into a sport and not knowing how your money's being, like, used, and, like, you know, and, like, not knowing, like, how to invest your money. And so I didn't want that to be me. And obviously that's a football lifestyle, but, like, obviously with track and field, like, it's a little different because I'm not making football money. So I got to find a way to make my own money and myself. And so just I had to, like, I'm trying to educate myself in that type of realm of, like, okay, if this does happen, I need to be able to invest in stuff that's going to not only benefit myself, but obviously benefit other people as well. Like, that's, like, my main thing is to help other people out. So, like, just trying to find those investments that I need. And so that's my main thing, and that's how I kind of learned and realized, like, okay, this is a business, because you never know when you're going to get let go. Because, and also you'll never know when you're going to get injured, that's going to end your whole career. So you need that backup plan. And so, and also too, I want to reiterate my point on the 8 to 10 years. That's like really good athletes. I'm talking about elite of the elite. They usually last that long. I feel like with a regular professional athlete, it really is less than that, like 5 years, maybe.
Really?
Tops. Cause it's just like, A, either the injury, or B, you kind of, I say peak, you kind of hit that peak of your career and you're not getting any faster. And so then when you kind of hit that peak, you're going to start to digress afterwards. And then eventually it's a business, so you end up getting cut, and then you got to figure out what you're going to do after that. And so
what do you see the majority of those, like the majority of just like average track and field athletes doing after track and field nowadays?
Yeah, so a lot of them, I feel like, for one, the real good ones kind of get into coaching. So they try to go back and, like, go back to college, try to coach collegiately, or even some, they even try to coach other professional athletes. That's another thing they try to do. And so a lot of professional track and field athletes like to do that. Or they go back and a lot of them get the degree. Like, you see a lot of track and field athletes, they get the degree before they even get to the professional realm. Some athletes, obviously, some go beforehand and they don't even get the college degree. But a lot of them get the college degree because they know, like, if something ever happens to them, they need a backup plan. They continue to try to educate themselves. And so that's one thing I think I see a lot of athletes doing, at least in the track and field realm.
That's what's up. And I know you mentioned for you in that after part, you were mentioning you want to be a VP at a Fortune 500, 200 company. What would you ideally like to be doing as a VP? And, like, when you talk about the future, what is that like? Does it just being a VP, or maybe do you want to ever, like, start a business at some point? Or what are your ideal goals after this?
Yeah, so me, it's kind of like Yanni's role, that chief supply chain officer. That's kind of like, I love supply chain. When I got into the role that I got into my internship, I really enjoy the supply chain side of things. I think when I get older, that's kind of like what I want to be a part of as a VP. But, like, kind of like my ultimate goal in terms of the business side, like owning my own business, I want to find a way to increase, specifically really in the track and field world, the performances of track and field athletes, and try to increase their performance so they can perform better in the future than they are now. That's like my main goal. And so in terms of, like, either figuring out the shoe design, so Nike just came out with a brand new shoe, or coming out with a shoe called the Alpha Flies that kind of has like this carbon plate inside the shoe, and a carbon plate allows athletes to, like, get more reaction and more push off the ground, so it allows them, like, to move faster as they're running. And so some people say, oh, that's kind of cheating, all this other stuff, but it's just like, it's a new innovation, it's a new thing that's happening. Yeah, it's engineering. And so I feel like that is, like, my goal. I want to be able to find that next thing. So now that you have the carbon plate, what's the next step? And that's kind of like my thing I want to be able to find, hopefully later on in the future, to help benefit track and field athletes. And it could not be in a shoe. It could be, like, you know, they're, like, clothing stuff that they got going on, apparel, But, like, just, yeah, that's, like, my main thing that I want to do. I want to be able to help out track and field athletes. Start there and eventually expand into other parts of the sport. So, like, football, basketball, soccer. And, yeah, that's pretty much my dream. I want to leave an impact in the sporting world.
That's what's up. So, for you then, like, how would you define success? Like, if you had to put a definition to it.
Yeah, it's really not even a money thing. Like, I could have $500 million. But if I didn't impact somebody's life and make them better at what they're doing, I feel like I'm having succeed in life. So my success is really impacting and inspiring other people to not only, like, work hard at whatever they're trying to do and look at their passion and try to make their passion into a dream, into a job, and be able to, like, work at that. And then also just help them really just, like, get to whatever point they want to in life, in the sporting world for me, because I'm big into sports, so I want to help athletes out in the sporting world. And so that's my success, is really just helping out any type of athlete and just try to, like, inspire them to be whatever they want to be in the sports world and get them to that level and show them the hard work. And it's pretty cool because, like, for me, like, obviously I got into my level based off hard work, and then I have people coming up to me. Like, for one example, at the Big 12 meet this year, mm-hmm. I should say, indoors, I had a kid come up to me, and he told me that they drove up from Kansas City to Iowa just to watch me race and wow. see me do whatever I do on the track. And I was like, this is crazy. And he's like, you've been a big inspiration for me. I want to be just like you when I go to college and, like, when I get older. And I was just, like, thinking to myself, like, this is crazy. Like, I never had
this. What goes through your head when you hear that from, like, fans?
Honestly, like, I just feel, like, joy and overwhelming happiness because, like, this is what I want to do. Yeah. Like, I want to be able to inspire people to be the best at wherever they're at and whatever they're doing. And if I can do anything in my power to help you out, oh, I'm going to do it. Best believe I'm going to do it.
That's and what's so, up, man.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, too, on the road to success, you know, there's always adversity and you have to deal with some challenges. What, because right now people look at you and like, wow, Roshan killing it, like, you know, like they think you just made like this, you didn't work for it. But on the road to success, you know, what have been some of your most stressful moments or hardships throughout the journey, and how are you able to overcome those challenges?
Yeah, really not forgetting the end goal.
Yeah.
Is really what it is. Like, I set goals for myself and I try to achieve them. So this past year when I was trying to – obviously when I fell, right, I fell at the national meet, biggest meet of the year for a college athlete on TV, all this good stuff, and I fell. So I wrote down my goals on a piece of paper and put them in my locket. So I told myself, this is what I'm going to do. No matter what I have to go through, no matter what I have to do, I'm going through this. So just really, like, goal setting has really, like, helps me – realign what I have to do, because obviously there's days where I just, like, I don't want to, like, go to practice, like, I'm just tired, I don't want to do this no more, like, I want to be done. But, like, it's those goals and those, like, achievements of, like, being able to reach that goal and then exceeding it, like, exceeding the expectations, like, that's really, like, what's gratifying for me. And so that's what keeps me going. And even though I have to go through some adversity to get to that level, like, whether it was trying to even get on the team, you know, coming back after falling, like, having to, like, reset my goals for the year, like, whatever it was, like, I just, like, realized the end goal and what I was trying to achieve, and just, you know, seeing other people do it, like, in terms of my idol, my dad, you know, he did everything he could to make sure he got to where he is in life now. Which, for those who don't know,
break down a little bit of that story for us.
Yeah, so my dad never went to college, and instead of going to college, he decided that he wanted to go into professional baseball world. So he, like, in order, like, in baseball, it's a little different. It's not track and field, to where you can just, like, just show up at a meet and you can just run, you know, certain meets in the U.S. In baseball, you have to pay in order to try out. You have to try out. They have to look at you, and then they say, okay, we wanted to keep you around, or they just, you know, kick you aside and say, no, we don't want you no more. And so you also have to pay for the tryout as well. So he really paid for the tryout. Yeah. And yeah, he tried out for, I believe it was the Chicago Cubs at the time. And yeah, he worked his butt off. And like, he went in for, he was telling me like the story, he went in for morning workout, but anybody was there. And he made sure that he did anything he could possible to make sure that he got onto the team. And all the hard work that he put into, he was able to get on. He wasn't on the A-League, as you were talking about earlier, as we were talking about earlier, there's different levels. Like, he was in the minor leagues before he was able to even get up to the majors. But, like, he had goals for himself. He said, my goal is to make it on the team. Cool. Now he's on the team. Now what's the next step? Okay, now it's time for me to get onto the major team, because nobody wants to stay in the minor leagues. You want to get to the big leagues. That's why you're there. That's why you play the sport. And so that's what his next goal was, is trying to get in the major leagues. And then eventually he did get on a major league. And so it's just really cool to see, like, how he was doing. And then after that, obviously, baseball didn't last long. Eventually, his career ended. And so now it was like, okay, what was next? And so now he works at AT&T. He's the director of, like, operations over at the downtown building here in Minneapolis. And, like, he started off at the very lowest level. He was an entry-level employee, and then he just worked his way up. Into, like, he had no college degree. Like, he just kind of, like, only thing he really had going for him was that, like, he played professional baseball. So it's like he had to learn everything from the entry level job and figure out how he can move up in the world. So it's just like seeing him, that he was able to do it, and other people who either were kind of similar situations as me, or like other situations, and seeing them succeed and what they're doing, that motivated me to go out and work hard and be able to get what I deserve. And so that's why I continue to do what I do and continue to pursue my dream.
That's what's up, man. I also wanted to ask you, did you ever, like, work out with your dad growing up?
Yeah, really with football. Okay, baseball was not my sport. I got in there, and I was like, this is boring. I was like, I can't do it.
There's too much sitting. I can't do it.
Exactly. There's too much sitting. Like, I was a kid that always wanted to just go out and just, like, do something, you know. I was like, I couldn't sit still. I was never the kid that sat still. So that's why I was drawn to football, because, like, you're just constantly moving. You're always doing something. And so I was too – like, eventually there was a point, though, that, like, yeah, I was a little skinny. I was too skinny for the sport. So then my parents were like, well, let's just try track and field now. Let's see if you can get into the track and field realm. And then I was like, okay, I'll try it. I actually hated it at first. I was like, I'm never doing this again.
Really?
Like, first year in track and field, hate it. I said, nah, this ain't for me. Let's go back to football.
That's hilarious.
And my parents were like, just give it a try. Just keep doing it. And I did. And then eventually I fell in love with it. And now to this day, like now it's kind of taking that spot of football. Like, this is my favorite sport now.
That's what's up. And I know we talked about some of the challenges you faced, you know, as an athlete, but what about off the track? What have been, like, some of the biggest challenges you faced off the track?
Yeah, really just some of the biggest challenges was, one, trying to find that internship, because I had to, like, prioritize, okay, did I want to, like, continue running, doing summer meets? Because track and field bleeds into the summertime. Yeah. Like, if I wanted to, I could have canceled a couple of internships so I could continue running and try to brand myself as a professional athlete, try to get myself more exposure. Like, even this past last year when I was at the national championship meet outdoors in 2019 and I fell, like, I felt like at that point I was like, oh, I have more to give. You know, I could have just said, you know what, screw my internship. I want to go and try to, like, run the fastest I can. I feel like I have more to give. But as I was telling you earlier, like, track and field doesn't last forever. So I had to make sure to set myself up and continue educating myself and learning new skills for that one time that, you know, track and field is done. So that was kind of, like, the challenge, is just trying to, like, pick and choose really what I really wanted to do in the outside of track. And so I wanted to make sure that I couldn't put everything in the track and field, and just, like, that off the field stuff, I made sure to try to, like, put that at first when I needed to during the summertime. And even when I was at school, some of the off the field issues was securing that internship, because the internship, we have this career fair at Iowa State, and it's one of the biggest career fairs, I feel like, in the country. We have, like, 300-plus companies that come to that career fair. But the craziest part is, guess what just during that time? Practice. So,
really?
Yeah, practice is going crazy. On at the time. So I had to literally, like, tell my coach, call him up and be like, hey, like, I don't think I can come into practice today. Like, I have to,
what did they say to that?
My coaches are actually very understanding. They understand that, like, you know, I need to be able to better myself and outside of track. And so they said, you know what, that's cool, Vashawn. Don't even come to practice today. Like, you can do a run before, like, the career fair and everything, and just make sure you're fully focused on what you need to do for that, and then we can pick up later on that week.
So you just worked out, went straight home, and then went to the career fair pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, literally showered up, went to the career fair. Like, it's crazy. But, like, I needed to do what I had to do. And I want an internship, so I want to make sure I fully focus on that for at least for, like, a week or two, securing an internship, going to the interviews, all the other good stuff. And so, yeah, I had to sacrifice track.
So knowing what you know now, with everything you've been through and, like, you know, the trajectory and the path you're on right now, what advice would you have for yourself if you were in the, you know, you're able to talk to your younger self?
Really, like, one, listen to my parents when it comes to hard work, because they, obviously my dad knew what he was talking about. It took me a while to figure out that hard work really, like, gets you places. And I think really when I came to college, it was kind of like the slap in the face, like, okay, like, you can't just have everything just kind of, like, easy and just handed to you. And so I would say literally listen to parents on that. And also be very perseverant, like, just really, like, understand what you want and just go for it. And, like, be very persistent. That's the word I was looking for, persistent in what you're trying to do. Because a lot of times I feel like for myself, that I need to work on is just like, okay, if I don't see it happen the first or second time, like, I'm just like, forget about it. I'm done. And it's just like, okay, well, like, sometimes you're not going to get it on the first or second time. You have to keep going before, like, something actually happens. And in terms of, like, Nike, like, as you know, I've talked to you many times about this, like, I want a job at Nike. And so I've always tried to, like, contact somebody via LinkedIn to try to talk to them about, like, getting a job at Nike. And there was a, I want to say, I contacted at least 20 plus people just like trying to, like, slide in on like my DMs.
You don't need one yes.
That's exactly. All. I only needed one yes. And so, like, it took forever. I want to say it took me 2 years before I actually, like, got someone to say, like, okay, let's actually take this guy seriously and look into, like, I don't know, a full time position. And so I just say to my younger self, be persistent and just, like, hammer down on what you want to do, because, like, you're not going to get anywhere in life. You're going to go through failures. You will go through failures. But those failures are going to lead you to success. And so,
how are those conversations going, though, with Nike now?
Yeah, so I had to put them on hold because I'm going to be coming back this next year to continue on with my younger self's dream of becoming a professional athlete. So going back to school for 1 more year.
Work is looking like it's going to be remote, so you never know.
Exactly. So I never know. I could honestly do that. But it's just like there's a lot of time that goes into, like, track and field. So I feel like if I'm going to focus on track and field, I'd rather just focus on that and then whatever I'm learning in school. And what I'm going to be learning in school is also going to benefit me for that job at Nike. And so I feel like I'm not just going back to school just for, like, you know, just for track and field. I'm also trying, like, I found something that's going to help me out in the future as well. So oh, I think you are fading out a little bit here. I think your camera's a little blurry. I think it is still a little blurry right now too. I can't really hear you as well. All right.
If you could, can you hear me now?
Yep, I can hear you.
All right, I'm going to cut that part out.
Okay.
If you could step into my shoes, are there any questions that you would have asked yourself today that I didn't ask you?
Oh, that's a very good question. Yeah. I would say, like, if I was in your shoes asking me, why – what made you want to, like, yeah, I guess you can say, what was that switch that made you realize that hard work and perseverance and determination, all that good stuff, was what you really needed to get to the point that you are in life now? Like, what was that switch? I know we kind of touched on it a little bit, like, earlier, but, like,
let's dive into it. What was that for you? because that's another question.
So when I was in high school, my first 2 years, I was grades were not looking good. I really, like, I don't know, my mentality in high school was I was just going to coast through. Like, I was just going to go to college and just kind of just, like, get my degree and hope things kind of work out. I don't know why that was, like, my mindset. It wasn't a very good mindset because I never really, like, worked hard, especially when it came to track and field. I didn't really work as hard in track and field. I didn't try to do the extra stuff on the side to try to make myself better. When it came to classes, I wasn't doing well. Like, my GPA was not good at all. It was nowhere near to get academic scholarships after my sophomore year. And then, so came to my junior year, like, that's when, so after freshman year of high school, I moved to Minnesota. So my sophomore year is when I first started going to high school in Minnesota. And that junior year, it was around second trimester time, because we have trimesters in Minnesota. And that's what some just clicked. I don't know. It's really because my school that I really want to go to is Arizona State. And I called them up and I was like, hey, will I be able to get in-state tuition? And they said, no, because you don't live in Arizona no more, so you won't be able to get in-state tuition. And I was looking at out-of-state tuition, and it was costly. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, oh, no, like, I got to find a way to, like, get some, like, scholarship. And so I was like, I got to work hard now. So that mindset kind of changed, and I realized that, like, okay, I can't go through life coasting no more. Like, I can't just coast and hope that things kind of work out for the best. And when it came to Arizona State, I didn't get any scholarships because I waited too long. And then that's when ISU popped up, and I was thinking, oh, this school looks really nice. Like, it has everything I'm looking for. Let me just go here. And I'm honestly really glad that kind of happened because, like, it really changed my mindset. And also, that's why I'm glad that I didn't get a track team my first year as well, because it really made me realize that, like, you can't go through life without working hard. You have to go through it, and also you gotta go through some type of failure before you can actually succeed. And that really, like, put some of my mind. I was saying, like, okay, from now on, anything I'm doing, I have to give it my all, because I'm no longer gonna just, like, sit back and hope that things work out for me and just, you know, kind of just hope that, yeah, anything will just work out for me. If I want some, I need to be able to go get it, and I gotta find a way to be able to get it. And it doesn't matter what I have to do, I need to go out there and do it. And so that's kind of like what my mindset really changed was junior year, and going to my senior year of high school. Then, like, really when I got to college, it's like everything really started to click, and I was just like, okay, I'm done. If I want to go get some, I'm gonna go get it. And yeah, and that's really what changed for me.
I love that. Yeah, they don't tell you that, but, like, the majority of the time, opportunities are not given; they're created, and that's what hard work does. It allows you to create those opportunities for yourself.
Exactly.
I ain't dropping gems. I was gonna say, if we have, like, any folks listening that whether they're in engineering or, like, they're athletes and just want to connect with you, or, like, maybe ask for some advice, what would be the best way to reach out to you?
Yeah, I would say any of my social media platforms. This could be my first name, Rashawn Rooms. That's, like, my that's my name. First and last, no spaces, no caps. And either there, just, you know, give me a quick DM. I'll be happy to talk to you. Or if you don't want to do it that way,
bio for that. So look at bio for that. We'll drop the link for the Instagram.
Definitely. And then also too, I can leave my email as well. You want to email me? Send me a quick email. I'm glad to tell you about my story. And, like, if you need any help, I'm always here to help people, because that's what I want to do. I love to help out people. So yeah, any questions y'all got? Let me know.
Much appreciated, man. Thank you again for taking the time to be on our podcast.
No, thank you, man, for this opportunity. It's great. And I love what you got going on here. So keep doing it, man.
Definitely will do. Hopefully we're going to bring you back in another couple years here and see where you are in the journey.
Yes, sir. I can give you a little recap.
Will do. All right. That'll be all for today's episode. Tune into the next one.
All right. Thank you.